You can't outsource your core competencies, and your brand is not your logos, a color set, a font set, whatever it is. It's who you are, and you can't outsource that. And the more that you lean into who you are, the more successful that you'll be.
This is Bridging the Gap with your host, Matt Reiner.
Kristen Shea, welcome to Bridging the Gap. How are you doing?
What's going on, man?
Not much. This is going to be exciting. You know, I was really excited, and then right before we started hitting record, I found out that you're a Phillies fan, and that kind of made me, you know, set me back. But I think we were able to bridge that gap, and we'll be able to do this show without any Philly Braves talk or anything of that nature, I think.
Yeah. If you're listening to this, then we got over it.
Yeah. That is true. Well, yes. Kristen, you know, author, consultant, you know, master of everything financial services. Like I mentioned to you before we started recording, I mean, I've been following all of your work, and just your inspiration to the industry and what you're doing for the industry is incredible, and super grateful to have you. And our conversation is going to be awesome. We're going to talk about, you know, everything from building your brand, building kind of who you are to market yourself, to creating products inside of your business, which I think is going to be super interesting. And then also this concept of shifting from advisor to businessizing your business and some of the different mindsets and strategies. So I'm stoked to get to all of that. But before we do, I want to help our audience get to know Kristen Shea a little bit better. And I, you know, I know nothing else better than to kind of talk about, you know, you're doing everything, it seems like, within financial services. And I'm always curious of, like, this is what the 13-year-old Kristen Shea wanted to do. So I always like to ask the question, what did the 13-year-old Kristen Shea want to do?
What didn't the 13-year-old Kristen want to do? I always thought I wanted to be famous, which I think is, like, silly. And maybe that's why I like to create videos. There always was, like, I want to have a talk show. I want to be a sportscaster. You know, what that says about me, I don't know. Maybe. I guess I wanted attention as a kid, but, you know, whatever. Wanted to play sports. Wanted to be a professional athlete. Wanted to be a psychiatrist. Wanted to be an artist. Wanted to not have a job and travel. Want to have a smoothie shop. I don't know.
I love all of that. I mean, I think that we align on the sports broadcaster. I always wanted to be Stuart Scott and be on SportsCenter and be able to do the top 10. That was my kind of my desire at that point in time. But, and I think that you've wrapped a lot of that.
Bill Buck.
What? As Bill Buck?
As long as it's not Bill Buck.
That is true. That was not my MO. That was not my desire.
Hey,
there's no cutting of editing of this podcast. Everything that's said just gets pushed in. So that's what makes it natural and real from there. But no, so going from kind of the wanting of everything, right? I think that the attention idea is something of an aspiring person that has, you know, the creativity and the art and everything of that nature is there. How did you get to this point then from that point? Tell us about the journey from 13-year-old Kristen to today.
An accident. I hadn't channeled my energy for the sake of, for like, to be a productive human. So I always wanted to move fast, do things fast, do it all. And it got me in some trouble. Got a bunch of speeding tickets, so much so that they revoked my license. Graduated at 16, but, you know, it was like, let's channel your energy a little bit. Can't do well at community college when you can't commute. Ultimately, I got into a car accident, which was a blessing. It was, it gave me like one concussion too many. I think it's five. It was my fifth, and I had some brain trauma, and it kind of put me on my butt for a while, long enough to get my license back and transfer from the community college to George Mason. And bounce around in majors, psychology, communications, just general student of the people, more like qualitative type studies. Went to George Mason, transferred into kind of like an economics business focus. But at that point I was over college, you know, it's like, I felt like I'd done all this stuff to get ahead. And then it was like, I'm ready to just get started and I'm over college. So I was recruited out of a restaurant I was waiting tables at by two nice guys who tipped well, fell into the corner of the industry that wholesales annuities to independent advisors as a 21-year-old, dyed my hair black, had an identity crisis where it's like, I'm part of the machine. I'm not an artist anymore. I'm in finance, worst industry ever. And then very quickly, I mean, literally dyed my hair black, but then very shortly after, realized that if there is a place to be a student of the people and a servant of the people, and where you can apply psychology and not only can, but should, because it's all about relationships and people. And then honestly, like, really make a difference in the world, like feel like you're doing work that matters through the advisors that you serve. It's, I fell in love with it. I think as far as I go, it's either there's no halfway. So completely fell in love with the people, completely fell in love with the possibilities, and also like being told that I can't do things, because then it makes me want to do them. And it felt like there was a lot of things that I wanted to do and I was being told I couldn't, which was like, all right, you know, I love this, right? Watch me, you know?
I think that it's somewhat it's inspiring for sure, in the sense that, you know, you came from a different background, came into it, told that you weren't able to do it, and now you have done it and you are doing it from that standpoint. I guess, you know, what's one of those things that was the biggest challenge from transitioning from the selling annuities to then working in the advisory business? I'm wondering what the biggest challenge was as you kind of progressed up that journey.
To be honest, getting to a place where I was allowed to help advisors build businesses. 2020 hit, and you're 21, you get into the business. Here's one of those things they tell you, like, you can't do is you can't build a business online, especially as a wholesaler. It's definitely not going to happen. So I leaned into LinkedIn as a way to, prospect, honestly. And I fell in love with marketing, became a student of the game, fell in love with the psychology behind it. 2020 happens, and advisors really needed help throughout that. I mean, up until 2020. So over the course of 7-8 years, I guess this love for the game, love for like the content business building game, had gone pretty deep. I was doing speaking engagements and on tour with the Rolling Stones, and we had gone, the company I was at, which I couldn't be more grateful for, had just gotten bigger and bigger and gone through a couple acquisitions, and it wasn't the small tight-knit team that it had been, where like when you're innovating, everyone gets behind you and because they trust you, where instead there are people that you don't have relationships or like, wait, slow down. I don't understand what's happening. So it needs to stop, you know? So 2020 happened. I may be oversharing. It felt like my job was an annuity wholesaler, and I was being told to make more cold calls and run more illustrations for annuity products, when what I really wanted to do and how I was spending all my time was running Facebook ads and campaigns for our advisors and trying to help them build systems and infrastructure to like turn those leads into clients, which, I mean, yeah, sure, helped the annuity premium. And that was great, because I guess that's how I got paid. But I felt like I was actually making a difference. And it became more about, I think you see this, and this wasn't in that company, it wasn't the heart of that company, but the way I perceived it was, I feel like I'm not in a place where I'm serving advisors at the highest level, based on where I guess my skill sets and passions and journey have taken me. Mm. I'm not good at follow through, like say going into a website and plugging in a thing and plugging in a bunch of numbers and pulling it out and emailing it over and saying, here's the numbers. I'm not really wired for that anyways. So I have a couple mentors. It's actually the 3-year anniversary. People that I just looked up to in the business who were kind of looking at an industry that was ripe for disruption, where like 2020 was a year, I feel like, where everyone kind of realized like, it's become more about the masses than the masterminds. It's become more about like the templates than what's tailored. And it's become more about the profits than the people. And everyone kind of like woke up and was like, what matters? And is the work I'm doing important? And is it making a difference? Or is it all about profits, templates, and like the masses? And two people I really look up to had a vision, was on board, like loved the vision before. So took my dog, left my fiance, signed a piece of paper and said, let's change an industry, change lives, have a lot of fun doing it. So like today's actually literally the 3-year anniversary of signing a piece of paper on the hotel stationery. So, I mean, the transition was the easiest thing that could have ever happened from like a purpose direction point of view. The journey of building a startup from 0 to 68 people in 3 years is a different story. It was just a matter of being in the right place to do the things that you love.
I love that. I think that's incredible. And I think it's just a matter of identifying where your passion is. And your passion was, you identified within other aspects of selling annuities as opposed to just the selling side. And so that kind of really leads into an area that I want to dive into, right? That passion side, you know, the consultative aspect of what you were doing as you're selling annuities, of helping them run ads and help convert their leads and build their brand and everything of that nature, is super interesting. And I think that every advisor I talk to, the biggest challenge always is growth. They want to grow more. They don't know how to grow more. You know, the channels are becoming harder and harder. Referrals is the core way that advisors grow. So I'm curious, this idea of building a brand, building an authentic brand that really displays who you are, what you do, and attracts those people that want to be a part of what you are building. And so, you know, as we dive into that, what is some of the challenges that you've identified in the marketplace that advisors have building a brand? And then, you know, to some of those challenges, how do we overcome that as advisors to build an authentic brand that resonates with the marketplace?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. Even just the sentiment and the reality of advisors wanting to grow. It's, first of all, grow why? Is it because you're being told to do more, sell more, spend more? And then also grow into what? Like, what, you know what I'm saying? I think that there's a difference between success and significance. That's something that we talk a lot about. And like, success is about you. Significance is about others. And a lot of the definition, I think, of success in our industry is broken because a lot of advisors on this path to try to create success are burning themselves out. They're doing it at the expense of the time with their loved ones, building a business that they love, building a business that blesses their life instead of becomes it. You know what I'm saying? So you're constantly playing whack-a-mole with like the idea of the day and the vendor of the day, and also trying to run a business, meet with clients. From a branding point of view, I think along those lines, they're being sold a lot of ways to build a brand. I think advisors in general are wired similarly to how I am, and probably in some ways how you are as a creator and innovator and a thought leader in the spaces, is somebody who wants to build, they want to be proactive, and they want to see results because they want to create results, are goal oriented. And I think advisors want things done fast. And a lot of people make promises on things that can be delivered fast. But the reality is, if you're talking about a brand, that doesn't happen overnight. That's the downside. The good side is it doesn't have to be as expensive. It's not something you have to swipe a credit card in order to access or create, because it's truly one of the most important things to never outsource in your business. You can't outsource your core competencies, and your brand is not your logos, a color set, a font set, whatever it is. It's who you are, and you can't outsource that. And the more that you lean into who you are, the more successful that you'll be. I have a couple like really core philosophies about branding. You may have heard me say before, because I feel like I say them all the time. One, we're in the attention economy. So capturing people's attention is the hardest thing you have to do. And that attention inequality gap is going to continue to get bigger. So the world continues to move faster. So one, you have to get attention. But two, it's not B2B, it's not B2C, it's H2H. So you have to be human. To take it one step further, in the context of the attention economy and being human, you have to be magnetic, right? But a lot of times when you think about being magnetic, you only think about attracting, and you forget that the other side of a magnet is that it repels. And if it's not repelling, then it's not attracting, right? All the content that's made for the masses of consumers, it's not human, it's not personal. You're not attracting anybody. You're not repelling anybody in a meaningful way either, because you're not getting anyone to raise your hand and say, this is for me. Does that make sense?
And so when you say, yeah, let's dive into that for a second. When you say repel, in how I interpret it, and I don't know if this is where you're going, is that you really need to create content that doesn't resonate with some people, because not everybody is going to be attracted to you as an individual or you and your services. Is that where you're going, or did I interpret that in a different light? Because I think about attraction as you should be really honing in on a specific niche and attracting to them. And so if you're serving construction workers, it should be construction workers, and it wouldn't attract really me. It would repel me from that standpoint.
Yeah, it's definitely something that's worth unpacking. Sometimes I feel like I need to breeze through that, because like when you say things a lot, you feel like people are tired of hearing them, but it's only just because like you say it and you think about it all the time. Repelling. What repelling does not mean is like making people mad. Like, you know what I mean? Like, right. Being aggressive for no reason, just to push people away.
Offending or aggression. Yes. Right.
Right. Perfect world. I think you'd be crazy to not have a niche as an advisor. That's like the ultimate example of attracting and repelling. Right. So let's say you work with women. Like, there's a big difference between women and single part-time single first-time working moms. Right. If you specialize in single first-time working moms, you should say that. You're going to repel all the women that are married, but that's fine. because those aren't the people that you want to attract. I'll give you a real story from my content. I think the way I learned this, the thing that kind of got my LinkedIn snowball rolling downhill, I recorded a video that I immediately regretted posting because I was like, that was too real. Everyone's going to hate me. I'm going to get in trouble. I think it was like 23, 24. I told this story about how I was at a conference with a bunch of older men. I mean, I think I was like 23, 24. Everyone in the room was like 30, 40, 50, 60. Only female in the room. Was really proud to be there. People that, I mean, were peers and I should have, I would like to look up to. There was a trivia game happening at the bar. And one of the questions was, name a hole that you can't get into. And one of them pointed at me and said, like, this one, you know, and the point of that, and I recorded that. I had my leather jacket on because it was like a total whim. It was on my heart because one of my colleagues was asking me, like, hey, I don't know what to do in this situation. What's your advice? And I was frustrated that I felt like in that moment, the best thing I could tell her was like, to an extent, you have to deal with it. So I was like frustrated that I felt like that was one of the best things I could say to her. So I had, my hair was like still halfway wet from the shower. I had my red lipstick on. I had a leather jacket. Not like what you think of when you think of LinkedIn, but it was real. It was me. Like that's me. It's not, you know, it's not a blazer, but that in itself is magnetic, you know? And I was like, I immediately posted it. I regretted it. I tend to take the shoot then aim approach. So immediately went over to some of the people I reported to. I was like, hey, I posted a video and I may have made a mistake. I'm sorry. But immediately afterwards, I just started getting flooded with messages with people saying, like, thank you so much for sharing. I like, this really resonated with me. This was so awesome. And that was like the first video that got really any attention. And you have this light bulb moment where you're like, well, if that didn't, like, if anyone is cool with like someone calling me a hole, like, I probably don't want to work with them anyways. But again, it doesn't have to be that serious. Like, something is like being like, I'm a dog lover. Okay, great. Like, if you don't love dogs, maybe I don't want you. Like, if you love planning for dog lovers, it's like part of like your ideal profile. You have a picture of a dog on your website, and then you have people that don't like dogs seeing that. Like, that's fine, because if you're so obsessed with, you love your dog that much, and I'm that person that you'd put them on your website, then like, that, wouldn't you love to have a client walk in the door that's like, oh my gosh, I saw the picture of your dog. Let me see your dog. And then you're like, oh my gosh, your dog's so cute. And oh, by the way, my dog's in the office. You know, like, you wouldn't want to, you'd want to build a business full of people that you love to serve. And the best way to do that is by being magnetic, which also helps with branding and marketing.
You know, I think that there's, I think you're going down this authenticity route. And I because I also want to touch back on this challenge that people are, they're sold a bill of goods that they can build a brand on social quickly, or build a brand in general quickly. Because I think that it's like you've mentioned, you know, it's about consistency. It's not, there's no quick silver bullet to it. It's a consistency and authenticity. But I want to dive into this authenticity one, because like, yours was a very real, raw, you're like, what the hell is someone thinking saying that type of situation? And it's like emotional. And then, but like, the challenge I think advisors have is like, how, where do I go with authenticity? Like, how, like, I think that it, and this is going to be a silly question, and I know that it's almost like people are asking, like, how do I be authentic, and how do I be authentic consistently, and do I need to have these like pull at the heartstring moments, which you just said you don't, but you know, for an advisor that is usually analytical, very, you know, strategic in nature and tactical, for them to go and become authentic, how do we help them get to that point? Or how do you, have you helped them in the past get to that point? And what are some ways for them to overcome that fear potentially?
Oh man, that's such a big question.
We can break it down into pieces.
Yeah. I think we do the why first and then we do the how. Okay. So we'll back it up a couple steps and in the context of growth, branding and lead generation are different. First and foremost, growth to me, if we hear that advisors want to grow, growth is top of mind. Typically, I interpret that as lead generation. Although I believe that that gets a lot easier when you have a brand. I think expectations about lead generation online are completely, lead generation specifically are completely, I think the expectations are completely mismanaged. For advisors, at any given time, there's something called the 3% rule. Okay. So 30% of your audience in like your ideal target market, whatever that is, let's assume 100% of the people on your timeline, if you will, in your network or in your target markets, 30% of them are never going to work with you. They're just not. That's fine. We don't care about them. Another 30% of your audience may be a good fit for your services, but not right now. Not on their radar. Maybe they will be in 10 years. Maybe they will be in 15 years. Maybe a certain triggering event in their life needs to happen. They don't have a problem that they're aware of that they need to solve with you at this moment. Another 30%, okay, so this is 90% that we're getting to now, knows they have a need, knows they have a problem, but they're not motivated to act on it. They're not motivated to solving that problem. 90% of your audience is not interested in working with you, or is not motivated to work with you at all right now, first and foremost. Okay, and we'll go back to that. In that last 10%, 7% of your audience, okay, they have a problem. They have an awareness of a problem. They have an interest in getting it solved, and they're preparing to take action on getting that problem solved. They're in the research phase. They're evaluating their options. They're paying attention, but they're still not ready to act. Only 3% of your audience right now is ready to act, okay? The content, branding aside, that advisors are putting out there, it's all business oriented, and it's not business media. It's social media. It's called social media for a reason. It's not B2B. It's not B2C. It's H2H. The way for you to capture the attention of that 30% of people that know they have a problem but aren't motivated to act on it and create top of mind awareness, to get that 7% of people to trust you and connect with you because you're standing out in a way that means something to them outside of the problems that they need to solve, is through your personal content. You bring people into your audience through, I have three content categories that I pretend to prescribe to. One is the personal. It's the human. It's the real. It doesn't have to be as authentic as talking about the craziest moment in your life. It could literally be as simple as telling a story in first person, like writing a post like you would text your mom and dad. That's a great start. The second category is kind of the interesting, the entertaining, the valuable, the inspirational. It's the type of thing that is low pressure, makes them think, expands on that connection, adds value to their life, but doesn't necessarily remind them that they have a problem that they may be like anxious about solving. It's like group text worthy kind of thing. It's like, how can I add value by entertaining, inspiring, and sharing something interesting? And that third category of content is the professional. That's where you provide the calls to action. It's the personal that brings you in. It's the personal that, if they like you and trust you enough, buy pictures of your family, pictures of you with your kids. Hey, I just hit my milestone. Hey, this is like business professional. Like, hey, we just opened a new office. I think that's too business oriented for it to be personal. It would be, hey, like 10 years ago, I weighed 350 pounds and I made a decision to change my life. That kind of thing. You know what I mean? I don't know. And then that's the kind of thing that gets people to pay attention to you. And if you've earned that trust and you have that rapport, then they're going to pay attention to you when you throw out that value add and that call to action where you're saying, hey, by the way, I understand you and I see you and I have something that can help you. And here's a next step that you can take. And it's a rotation of that, because on social media, you're not marketing to an audience in a room like you would be in a seminar or an educational workshop where they're not moving. You're marketing to a moving parade. Mm-hmm. It's constantly moving.
And so it's a mix of all of those, right? I love that idea of personal, inspirational, professional. And there is no like direct formula. This isn't a math problem. This is a be an authentic problem, and don't force personal stories just to force personal stories, but become aware of personal stories and be open to sharing them because your audience wants to hear about them, even though you think that they may not, but they do.
I bet if any advisor listening to this went back on their social media and any of their posts and looked at the ones that got the most likes, it would be the one related to their spouse, the one related to their kids, the one related to a milestone. I'm just thinking about LinkedIn, right? Work anniversary or something like that. And the ones that get the least engagement are the ones that are about tax law and estate planning and this and that. And that's just like the human algorithm. Like, people don't go on social media to read about tax law. period, ever. And with that being said, the social media platforms know that. Like, they're revenue generating companies. The social media platforms make money from the advertisers that pay money to place ads on the platform in the timeline, catch your attention. Okay. So they have an incentive, these social media platforms, to keep you on the platform for as long as they possibly can. When you use links, for example, would be one link to an article about tax law. Again, you're directing people away from the platform, and the social media platform is going to say, whoa, wait, no, no, no. We want to keep everybody here so our advertisers can see success and people can click on their ads. So we're just going to bury that and make sure no one sees it in the first place. So even from a business content point of view, it has to be through a personal, and I think you mentioned this before we got on conversation, through like a storytelling personal lens. I mean, if you can't approach it like an engineer on social media, you just can't. The reality is, like, this is a people business, and social, and the keyword of social media is social.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to the point of, you know, when you think about storytelling, the first word that comes to my mind is creativity. And then the first pushback that I hear from advisors tends to be, well, I'm not creative. I'm more analytical. I don't use that side of the brain. And I challenge that, because I think that we're all creative in our own way. And it's just a matter of just being free of showing who you are, and creativity will come out. There's, of course, like strategies and frameworks and stuff of that nature that you can use. But if you're just authentic, then you're ultimately creative, because the creativity is something unique, and authenticity of who you are is truly unique. And so everybody deep down is creative. Dude, it's just about being who you are.
You know what's so great? The first time it took me like 2 years to see my now husband's handwriting for the first time. I mean, it's like a digital age thing. And I remember seeing it for the first time being like, wow, this is your handwriting. He's like, what do you mean it's my handwriting? I do it every day. I'm like, it's your handwriting. Like, nobody else writes like this. Like, this is you. I think they're like, everybody is like, the idea of authenticity, like, we talk about it all the time. But like, what does that really mean? It's like, how would you text your brother?
Right. Right.
However you would talk to your brother, however you would talk to your best friend, is how you need to show up. And that's it.
That's exactly. And because that's the way that you can consistently be, because whenever things get pressure or you get pushback, you're going to fall to your default. And that's your default of who you are. And if you're trying to be someone that you're not authentically, someone's going to poke a hole in it eventually, because it's hard to keep up with. And you just got me the idea of saying, like, what happens if we turn social media into every post was handwritten? So you had to handwrite your post, and then now every post would look different. Now, we wouldn't be able to read a lot of them because, like, my handwriting is terrible. But think about that. Now everybody's post is creative and authentic because you had to handwrite it with what is making you authentic at that point in time. That's something interesting. 100%. I want to shift to this idea, because we're talking about social media and how to build a brand. But there's also this other concept that me and you were talking about before we started recording, about this productization aspect of, right, how to create a product within your business. This could go 100 ways, but tell me more of your vision and your philosophy or your thought behind this idea of productization within your business.
Okay. You ready for this?
I'm ready. I've got my pen and I'm ready to write with my own unique handwriting.
Okay. So special. okay. So evolution, I'll give you the backstory, something I've thought a lot about. I'm really excited to hash this out with you. I think it is potential. I think it's a game changer, but we can figure that out together. Moved into, so business, Triad Partners, we started 3 years ago, started off in that role in a business as a business development coach. Okay. Very similar to the annuity wholesaler and I'm sure advisor space, in the regards that, like, the success of your day is measured by the number of people that you talk to, the number of emails you respond to, and the quality of those conversations. I'm a builder I like to build. I like to write. Right? I think everyone should be a builder. I think there is an element of being a creator, to your point, that everyone needs to lean into if you want to continue to build equity in your business and also be the best human that you can be. Because when you create, like, what you create creates you, which is really deep. We'll save that for another day. But I moved into I was moving back to Virginia, moving back from Kansas, moved me into this role called Chief Product Officer. And I had to do a lot of research on what that meant, because as a business development company, we're still on an FMO chassis. So it's still in the annuity life insurance distribution space for a really select group of people. But we don't get paid for services. Okay. So that's the background. I've thought a lot about this. My role is Chief Product Officer, building products. Looking out at the advisor landscape, first and foremost, the products in advisors' business, the products, life, annuity, investments, AUM, whatever it is, variable annuities, bond stocks, those are not your products. There's a quote, I wish I knew who said it so I could quote them appropriately, but there's a quote, in a world where products and services become more and more commoditized every day, your client experience is your one true differentiator, right? That was a guiding force for me in terms of understanding and interpreting how to build a product in a service-based business, okay? So that those are kind of like the fundamental ideas. And then I'll be curious to hear your thoughts. Advisors are not in a product-based business. We're not. We're salespeople, yes, but it's not a product business. Two, it's a service-based business. But three, how can we turn our services and the client experience into a product, okay? So there are products that are servicized, where the servicization process, okay? An example of that, or like a product distributor, would be Best Buy, right? They sell technology. And then they created a service by saying, hey, we'll drop it off at your house and we'll set it up for you, okay? Our service is, I mean, first of all, it's not what we do. Even it's not even what we do. It's not even tax planning, income planning, any of that. That's just the what. The service is what we make possible. Freedom, confidence, clarity, empowerment. You know, I mean, like the list goes on, the outcomes that we create. And everything that we do should be aligned with supporting that service, whether it's putting the plan in place, building the plan, analyzing risk, updating beneficiaries, reviewing the tax documents, et cetera. As a service, there's an opportunity to turn that into a product. In any other industry, okay, a product is something that you have defined. It is a specific tangible thing with a specific designed value for a specific type of person where there's a price that is agreed upon, you know, that kind of like reinforces that value, says you're offering this, I will pay this price to get it. The price is irrelevant here, but what it does have is a name. It does have, it's designed to solve a specific thing. It's limited in scope and it's process oriented. There's a prototype and it's put on a manufacturing belt to be rinse, wash, repeat, which makes it systematized, which makes your approach to creating an amazing service scalable. I know a lot of that's really high level, but let me give you an example. And then I want to hear your thoughts. Beneficiary reviews. It's something that is really little. And I think everybody for the most part does or deals with to some extent. Okay. Huge opportunity, right? I think what 7 in 10 people change advisors when the money changes hands. That's something you do. Passed away, somebody got married, they changed their last name. Great. If capturing the next generation or capturing the assets for the next generation is something that's really top of mind for you, you want to bring in the next generation, create a system where you're proactively engaging multiple members of the family in a systematic way that allows you to uncover assets and uncover opportunities in their portfolio in the way that helps you drive revenue, but also helps you do a great job providing your service, then why wouldn't you turn that into a product? Like off the top of my head, the next generation accelerator, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You give it a name. This is what it is. If you do this, this, and this, then you'll get this, this, and this. And it has a really amazing deliverable that comes with it. And it's a product within itself that you're selling that allows you to, I mean, like, it's like, it explains, having a product helps you explain the service without actually explaining it, because it speaks for itself, the problem that it solves, it is what it is. It's systematized, which allows you to do it easier, because if the prototype's solid, then the manufacturing's there, and then do more of the other things that you love. Does that make sense?
It does. There's a lot of points in there that I agree with. And I think that the aspect, the core
we're
component.
We're totally winging. This is the first time trying to articulate
it. I love where you're going, because actually there's something that we're working on within our firm that really actually aligns with this. And I think that the thing to know here is that in an industry where we're being commoditized for what we were, which was investment management, we have to become what we're going to be and what our true value has always been, which is client servicing. This has always been a relationship business. They don't buy or sign up your agreement because you have a better annuity. They sign up because they like you better. They don't sign up because you have a better investment philosophy. They sign up because they like that person. And now the accessibility of all it is there. So it really, the product we've always been selling is client experiences, to your point. And when you think about any experience that's out there, right? I'm just thinking like off the top of my head, like Disney World is not a product. It's an experience.
Correct.
And they have honed in on selling that experience. And there is a value in experiences. And this is why I think that it's so important, something that we're focused on here as well, is like you've got to work on moving up the value pyramid within your service provider to fulfillment. Ultimately, people want to have fulfillment and legacy and purpose. That's where they want to get to. Managing money is down at the bottom. And it doesn't give them purpose or fulfillment. It may be necessary to get there, but you have to have the conversation and build the service model around to deliver that. And there's a, you know, Hal Hirschfeld talks about it in the book, The Future Self, or it may not have been him. It may have been Zero, Living to Zero, but is the idea of experiential dividends. There's a reason why individuals should go and have experiences earlier on, right? We always say, well, when I get to this point, then I'll do X. When I become, you know, when I save $100,000, I'll go and hike, you know, Mount Kilimanjaro, I don't know, or Mount Everest or whatever it may be. But the problem is if you get to that point and you're 42 or 45, you may have missed the ability to do that. When if you would have just done it when you said you were going to do it and you were able to do it, then you could have done it. And so every experience you have has a specific time frame. And doing that experience creates experiential dividends, just like stock dividends that continue to pay you. Experiential dividends, though, are even more important because it creates happiness. And happiness, the more often and the longer you have it, the greater happiness you have and the more people you experience it with, the happier you're going to be. But too often we wait and delay. When I'm retired, I'm going to play a lot of golf. When I'm retired, I'm going to go to Italy. Screw that. When 100%. You're now go to Italy, when you're now find the ability to play golf, because it's going to pay off longer term. And so to your point, which is super interesting, how do you productize that? And how do you productize that is by you creating a business that delivers fulfillment and happiness, not delivering investment management. And the way that you do that is just like Disney does, is like, hey, here's your package for this experience. You want to go to, you know, Universal? Here's your Universal package, right? You get boom, 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 and you're going to have this experience. And it's best for kids when you have kids ages 13 to 15. I don't know what it is. And if you want this experience with brunch with the princess for you and your daughter up to the age 10, this is the experience and this is what you pay for that experience. So as an advisor, if you just want investment management, this is what you're going to get. It's going to be fine. But We do financial planning, but you can break it down. But like, how about happiness planning? Like, I want to provide, you want to live the best life, then here's the package to live the best life. You're going to have these types of conversations with me. We're going to talk about this. We're going to do this and you're going to pay off of investments, but I'm not going to look at them. We're talking about this. And that's the service. And I'm going to productize that inside of my business. And I'm going to change the perception of what we do to deliver H to H, what you're talking about, human to human, and deliver fulfillment, not deliver investment returns. Because we all know that investment returns over time will take care of themselves. So I'm in line. Let's go.
Yeah. I know I rambled a little bit. Thanks for helping me recover there. I think like one of the best metaphors from outside of our industry. Lol. I think packaging is a really important piece of it. I'm glad you said that. One of my favorite metaphors from outside of this industry is McDonald's and the Big Mac. Okay. You can get a hamburger anywhere. What are the ingredients? They're pretty universal. Got the bun, burger, lettuce, tomato, onion, bacon, cheese, bun. It's all pretty much the same, whether you add the bacon and the cheese or not. Okay. And then, but what did McDonald's do? They turned something that you could get literally anywhere into a product. The Big Mac became, a world phenomenon. Mm-hmm. They turned something you couldn't get anywhere else, that you can get anywhere else, and said, this is one of one. So as opposed to saying, hey, this is what I do, and this is kind of what I was getting to where I said, like, it helps you do less explaining. Hey, what do? Investment planning, investment management, income planning, retirement planning, tax planning. Here, we provide purpose-driven life planning. Does a lot of explaining. Mm-hmm. And helps you stay out of the weeds for the stuff that they don't really care about. They don't really care about investment management. That's the how. That's not what you make possible. You're making a purpose-driven life possible with a purpose-driven plan. And then you back into the rest of it. The packaging and the deliverables is everything. Like, I feel like a one-page plan is like such an important first step towards productization. And I think that advisors need to go all in on not just productizing their approach to planning through the lens of creating an experience and helping people live a better life, but look for opportunities to do that inside of every area of your business. Great. So the first product, the first experience is putting the plan in place. The second one is the ongoing client experience. This is what we call the make your mark movement, make an impact initiative, you know, or something, initiator, something like that. And it defines the 10, 20, 30 years that they're with you forever. And it's a defined product, defined experience with defined outcomes. It's packaged. And all of that helps you build equity in your business. Like, a lot of advisors don't really think about the equity in their business, and they lose so much brand equity because it's all outsourced to somebody else. Kind of jumping all over the place. Like, you go to sell your business down the road, and first of all, from a content point of view, the only thing that you're putting out there is somebody else's articles and somebody else's stuff, and you're not using your own voice. Not a lot of value in your business from a branding point of view. When it comes to appraise your business, if you do planning just like everybody else, where you're kind of playing whack-a-mole, they come in, you try to understand what their problems are, you put a bunch of stuff in front of them. Well, we could do this, or 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 what do you think? All right, well, you call me back, I'll call you back. You want to do this over 8 meetings? Okay, yeah, I'll do that. That's how we roll. Whatever you need, I'll do that, as opposed to flipping it and saying, hey, look, we have, experiential dividends expander, you know, I don't know, names off the top of my head, but that's what we do. You come in, it's a 3-step process. And when you're done with it, you're going to walk away with this 12-page document. You're going to walk away with this 12 thing that unlocks unlimited growth, freedom, and purpose in your life for you and your family. Awesome. So now that we've expanded your experiential dividends, here's the next step. It's the make your mark maximizer. And here's the plan. Over the next 2-3 years, this is what we're going to follow. You want to compare those two businesses and what that looks like for somebody who wants to potentially buy your business down the road. That's not even like the biggest benefit. It's a completely different conversation.
Mm. Yeah.
The human-to-human perception, one-to-one, it's a game changer.
You know, as you're talking, I think that the challenge in order to overcome, to get to this point that you're talking about, right, to productize services, there's two main things that are challenges that need to be focused on. And one is the whole concept of Simon Sinek of start with why, right? Start from the inside and move your way out, right? Dell and Apple do the same thing, but Dell says we sell computers. Apple says we're changing the world. And there's one brand that you want to associate with. The other brand, you look at it as a commodity, as a transaction, not as a... Like, I have everything Apple. I am all in on Apple because I want to change the world too. Like, that's me. I'm there. Like, there's some people that just want to buy a laptop and they're going to go buy Dell, and that's fine. But you have to have your why, and you can do it in multiple different products. Apple does it with computers, with watches, with headphones, with everything. Anything that they do, they're trying to change the world. And so it starts with the why. The second thing is that you have to become really good at systematizing. And I think that there's a challenge, right? You talk about McDonald's. I love that story. I love McDonald's because it's like everywhere you go, you know, they took a burger that you can get everywhere and they made it something that you can only get at McDonald's. But every McDonald's you go to, it tastes the same. Just like I just posted about Starbucks. I walk into a Starbucks across, you know, in Atlanta or in Tokyo, I get the same product. I get the same thing because they productized it. But I can make that same coffee at my house, but I still go to Starbucks. Because of the service and the experience that is there and how it makes me feel. And the way that they do that is by systematizing, even though and making processes, and advisors have always stayed away from that because of this concept of everybody, it needs to be white glove service and everything of that nature. And I think that that's where it gets lost about systematizing and productizing and processizing, lots of isings there. Is
every single ising?
Everything
gets lost.
Exactly. But that's a problem. But creating processes is so important so that you can deliver a consistent experience to build trust. And that's, I think, a point of taking all of these different things you're doing and create a process around it and not letting it be owned by the client, but you owning it because you know that this is the proven process that works to create the experience that's going to be unforgettable, or it's going to be unforgettable for you.
100%. I know we're running. Can I share something with you on this note?
Of course. Okay, we'll run over if we have to, if you're okay with it.
I'm down. This is, okay. I'm loving this. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So it's interesting. So start with why. 100%. It's interesting. What got McDonald's to the point of the Big Mac, because a lot of things happened before the Big Mac, did start with their why and did start with their ideal customer. Like, I feel like everyone's like, well, you have to start with the people you serve. And the people are like, yeah, I get it. But it's like, no, do that. You know what I mean? Before you go back to the OG McDonald's. Okay. It was built by the two McDonald's brothers. Okay. It was a traditional drive-in model that was popular in the 60s, 50s, 60s. Okay. You drive in, girls on roller skates come out, drop off your food, they leave. Okay. And what they wanted to do was bring in more families because they were attracting a lot of teenagers that would just come around and loiter and then watch these girls on roller skates. Okay. So the first big change that they did in order to attract more families and make their business more efficient was eliminate the drive-through model. There was the first business in the restaurant industry to really commit to a self-service model. The second big change that they made before the Big Mac that helped support these systems and led to like the true productization of the Big Mac, right, is what a lot of people don't know is that McDonald's was originally a ribs restaurant. They had 20-something items on their menu. Hamburgers, French fries, those hamburgers weren't even like the top things on their list. But it was difficult for them to create things quickly for professional families on the go because there were so many things on the menu that they had to be able to give them. So they stripped their menu down to 9 items, every single one of them handheld so that they could eliminate silverware. They eliminated the need for trays, plates. It's all handheld. It's all using the exact same tools to build it. And that system alone, I should have the numbers in front of me. I always do this. I believe, and we can add it in the footnotes, gosh darn it, is they increased their revenue by more than 300%. Okay. So then they bring in Ray Kroc. And Ray Kroc is the gentleman who is attributed to being like the mastermind behind McDonald's. He was a milkshake salesman who saw what McDonald's had coined at this point. They productized their self-service, the speedy service system. Okay. Speedy service system. You come in, you don't have to sit in the drive-thru, no girls on skates. We'll get it to you quick. Be faster than anybody else. They were ordering milkshakes at a really high volume. Ray Kroc's checking in. He's like, this is interesting. How can I get involved? How can I participate? And he's like, this is easy enough. Okay. Let's open a McDonald's somewhere else. The McDonald's that he was opening in other locations failed miserably. Why? Because they diverted from the process. They were selling tacos. They were selling hot dogs. Okay. Inside of your business, if you're the lead advisor, right? Like even like from a scalability systems point of view, systems make your life easier, but it also helps you grow. Okay. And grow to go all the way back. This comes full circle, grow in a way that you can build a business that blesses your life instead of becomes it, because other people can plug into those systems and follow them and create the exact same duplicatable success. McDonald's didn't do that overnight. The other McDonald's teams were there. I mean, they're selling tacos. It wasn't the same model. So if you have other advisors on your team, are you selling hamburgers and are they making tacos? Are you not following the same system? And if you're not, why not? And if you don't have the bandwidth, which is like always the easiest, it's always the answer and such a valid one, is you need to hire someone that specializes in that. You can't do it all, be it all for everybody. And you need to, I think like having someone that can own the operations of your business and an EA at the bare minimum as a starting point is the first step towards creating those systems. Because if you're the innovator and the visionary, building the prototypes is your role, but the maintenance and the manufacturing is way harder, to be honest, than building the prototype. And it requires a certain skill set that you have to be able to commit to.
And it's okay if you are the visionary building the prototype and not building the future process and manufacturing. I think that that's something that we all have to get okay with. Like, there's two points I want to make, and then we may look to wrap it up. But Kristen, we may have to have you back because we can talk for probably hours, and we can make this like a Tim Ferriss podcast and go for like 15 hours.
Thanks for being down for going a tangent with me. I'm glad that this is
Well, no, this is an awesome tangent because I think there's two points. I think, you know, there's this one podcast that I listened to. She was a uber successful CEO, startup CEO. And she realized that she was a people pleaser. And I forget the exact company. I think it was one of the Guy Raz podcasts or whatever it must be. But she realized that she was a people pleaser. And she always had this feeling that if I start a company, I need to be the CEO of the company and I need to run the company. I need to manage the people. I need to manage the leadership team. I need to do all this. But she was really just the visionary. She understood that. And she finally identified that she was a people pleaser, and her company was actually struggling because she couldn't have that difficult conversation with her team. Like, this is a challenge that we need to get over. It's a charged conversation. And so she finally went and got a CEO and got out of that seat and realized that, hey, I'm the best chief product officer, chief visionary, whatever she became, and brought in a CEO, and the company skyrocketed. And great leaders, when it comes time when you have to become a business, not just like a lifestyle business that you're just starting up. When you become a business, you have to have that kind of ability to put your ego to the side and do what's best for the business and put yourself in the best seat, just like you're trying to put your team in the best seat. And sometimes, all the time, you're not the best seat to doing everything. And you need to find your right seat and be comfortable with that. And I think that's kind of like what you're alluding to there. And the other thing is that I don't know if advisors are going to like to hear this, but that's okay. They sometimes agree with me on things, sometimes don't. But whatever, it doesn't matter what you're doing. We are selling something, right? You can either sell a product and you can sell a service.
And 100%.
When you sell a product, you have an assembly line that creates and manufactures it to create consistency.
Yep.
And just because we're selling a service doesn't mean that we don't need an assembly line. We do, because we're selling something. When you're selling something, yes, you have consistency of deliverability. And the only way to do that is to make processes, to create consistency
100%. In
what you're selling. And that's your assembly line.
The worst person, I feel like, for a lead advisor to be his HR, but that's a conversation for another day. That's like the first yeah. thing.
Well, and with that, whenever we bring in HR, we're going to bring that back to the next topic for next week when we come back on.
That's cool.
Yeah, no. We'll bring that out for next time. Before I let you go, though, I mean, this conversation was incredible. I mean, we could have had this go on for a lot longer, but I want to be respectful of your time and also the listener's time. But I want to wrap up with two questions that I always ask our listeners. And the first is, I'm a constant learner. I love to learn from people smarter than me. I like to read books. I know that you are an author of your own book, which I want to share here, is The Truth About Digital Marketing for Financial Advisors. And it's is not another fluffy surface level business book either. So go check that out on Amazon. It's incredible. But what is one of those books that you think everybody else should, or another book that everybody should read or reread if they haven't going forward?
Okay. Can I give you three?
Of course. Yeah, more the better. More the better. I love it.
Okay. So we talked a lot about client experience, and then we began to get into like team dynamics and leadership. Are you familiar with Joey Coleman?
No.
Okay. Joey Coleman was made famous by his New York Times bestseller, Never Lose a Customer Again. There's an 8-stage framework that all quote unquote customers go through. And he outlines the emotional almost like milestones and needs that they have at each one of those steps, and outlines different ways that you can address those. And he has this really amazing, it should not be available on Google. If it is, that's just him giving everything out. I think there's a PDF that breaks down Never Lose a Customer Again. It's like 36 pages where it breaks down each one of those 8 steps by text, email, handwritten note, phone call, in-person, gift. Just this past year, he took that exact same framework. I literally am reading it right now and applied it to Never Lose an Employee Again. So in the first 100 days, just like the clients, in the first 100 days, inside of those exact same, honestly, like the same 8 emotional milestones are similar. How do you approach those as a leader? So those would be the two like big reads if you want to buckle down, depending on which path you want to go down, which is client experience or leadership. But then if you're also the third recommendation, if you're that person that like doesn't have time to commit to a full book, because like, let's be honest, not everybody does. Tim Ferriss, Tribe of Mentors. He's interviewed some of the best and brightest minds of the industry and has a series of questions that he asks each one of them. And it's just a collection of insights and interesting answers to interesting questions from like brilliant people.
That's like
a chapter a day. Don't have to commit to it. And if you put it down and you pick it back up 3 months later, like you're not lost.
It's kind of like one of those books. I have a few of those that I read every morning during my kind of morning routine. That's just like a page a day or a few pages a day. And if you can, like, that's the Tribe of Mentors, right? You just get a few pages in a day and it inspires you to go forward. I love that. And thank you for introducing me to Joey Coleman. I'm excited to go check that out. I'm going to check out the client experience one first for sure.
He has a great interview on Brad Johnson's podcast. I'm the producer of his show. So I have to, it's a Do Business, Do Life podcast, but it all about this, his new book right before it came out.
All right. I'm going to check that out. Brad Johnson. I have seen him as well. All right. Last point. And we talked about a ton here. I mean, there's so much gold in this episode, but if you had to give the audience one actionable piece of advice to take away from this conversation, either that we talked about or that you wanted to talk about, but something actionable outside of all the other actionable ideas, but just something simple and actionable they can do tomorrow to better themselves, their business, or their client experience, What do you think that would be?
Whoa. One.
Just one. This one I can't let you go more than one.
Post a picture of you on your family on social media and watch what happens. And go tell Matt what happens. Tag Matt, tag me. And we'll show you some love. And hopefully that's the first step of many towards leaning into everything that makes you amazing and, you know, buzzword authentically you and like an amazing human worth working with.
We've done, I think, like 140 plus episodes of this podcast or 150 or whatever it may be. And I've never had a piece of advice like that. I think that that's incredible. Go do that. Post on LinkedIn at Kristen and I, and we will then go and comment and continue to show the love so that you can see all the impact that it has of just being personal and authentic on that side. I think that that's incredible. Yes. I love that. All right. Kristen, we're going to have you back on here again soon. But for all those that just are inspired by you, just like I am, and want to continue to follow you, what's the best way for them to stay in touch and continue to follow everything that you're doing in your world?
LinkedIn. I'm trying Twitter. Kind of trying it. Need to actually try it. LinkedIn, Twitter. Personal stuff, human to human. I'm on Instagram. You want to see pictures of my dog, but probably LinkedIn for business stuff.
Very good. And go follow Kristen. It's a great follow. You'll learn something every time you see her post. So Kristen Shea, thank you so much for spending your time and sharing your knowledge. I enjoyed this conversation thoroughly, and have a great rest of your week, all right?
Yeah, thanks, man. You too. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Bridging the Gap. Don't forget to give us a rating and let us know what you think.